Hey Dhamma friends, we are coming for the next item of the Mindfulness for Young Adult session. So that is a short Dhamma sermon which is related to the practice. And since we have completed Sabbasava Sutta during the last session, so I am taking a new sutta from today to discuss, and that is called Sati Sampajanya Sutta. So this is available in Anguttara Nikaya, where various numerical facts are being organized. And in this sutta, there are 8 factors or 8 steps are being described. And there are many aspects that we can learn from this sutta. And that's why I have taken this sutta for today's discussion. And sometimes we have the typical understanding that before development of the mindfulness, we should have fair amount of morality, sila, and only when one has fair amount of morality, sila, then only one can start practicing or start mindfulness or start meditation. And that is also true. Basically, if one has good sila, morality, Buddha says, while maintaining that morality, while using that as a foundation, and one should start to develop mindfulness. So that is the typical approach Buddha also has mentioned. And especially mentioned that when one develops the wholesome morality, that actually appear like a basis for the development of mindfulness, for the development of 4 satipatthana. And that is quite clearly mentioned in the Satipatthana Samyutta. And again, say for example, in the Patimokkha Sutta, available in Satipatthana Samyutta, where Buddha emphasized that for everything, the root of wholesomeness is the morality. And while keeping that morality as the basis, one should develop 4 foundations of mindfulness. So this is one approach Buddha is talking. Now, alternatively, Buddha talks differently here in the Satisampajanya Sutta, where one starts practice directly. One starts mindfulness practice directly, and mindfulness practice slowly brings several other factors together and combine together, and it leads to develop moral shame and moral dread. It leads to develop restraint, and ultimately it is reaching to the virtue, that is the morality. And further culminations of various other spiritual factors are there. So we will discuss one by one, step by step. So if we discuss the first step today, so this indicates some kind of a beautiful practical point, where if one even start with less morality, assume that your sila is not that good, you are not much careful about how you are using your body, you are not that careful of how you are using your words. But anyway, assume that one of your friend has persuaded you to practice mindfulness. So you start developing mindfulness. So that has become your one of the goal. And now assume that you are doing it wholeheartedly. You are trying your best to be mindful. So basically, say while driving, you are trying to be mindful. While walking, you are trying to be mindful. Say while talking, you are trying to be mindful. When you are wearing your clothes, you are trying to be mindful. Assume that while sitting, you are trying to be mindful. So you are keeping your attention on the, say, body. So you understand the posture. You are trying to keep some attention on it. And you are trying to understand rising and falling. Understand breathing. So likewise, slowly you are somehow trying to be mindful of the posture. So once you are somewhat successful, you can even recognize some bodily processes, because as your attention comes to the body, like what we did during the guided sitting session, once your attention is brought to the body, so various bodily processes can be recognized. So once these bodily processes are being recognized, now you are not simply being mindful on it, rather you are trying to recognize or investigate these processes. say, let's take the breathing. You are now trying to be mindful on breathing. There are, first you recognize, okay, this is the in-breath. You are trying to be mindful on in-breath. When out-breath happens, you know this is the out-breath. It's very simple. So, sato vasa sati, so vato passa sati. So, like that, Buddha introduced the practice in a very simple terms. So, we don't need to think too much about this sort of a practice. Rather, we are trying to be mindful as much as possible on the breath. When in-breath happens, we are fully aware of the in-breath. When out-breath happens, we are fully aware of the out-breath. So, this simplicity. And again, feeling that I can do it. This is a possible thing. I can do it in this very life. I can simply be mindful on this breath. So, this kind of a possibility actually allows us to practice, invites us to practice. So, if you think too much and if you are complicating the practice, or if you are adding too many formulas to it, much detail to it, expecting too much from it, then it is difficult. On the other hand, if you are keep it very simple, when in-breath happens, only thing you need to do is to be fully aware of the in-breath. When out-breath happens, only thing to do is to be fully aware of the out-breath. So you keep it simple as that. So you are wholeheartedly trying to be mindful on the in-breath and trying to be mindful on the out-breath. So likewise, assume now you are trying your best and now you are able to keep some attention on breathing and say 10 breaths in and out breaths, you can be mindful. So again, mind distracts. Now again, you bring it back. Again, you are trying to establish mindfulness. Again, mind distracts. Again, you are trying to establish mindfulness. So likewise, you are doing it again and again. You are practicing it. You are taming the mind, basically. So as you are continuing your practice, one day you may feel that compared to the previous days or compared to the previous month, now I have fair amount of mindfulness. I can maintain my attention on breathing for long time now. Previously, my mind couldn't stay on breath even for a second. Continuously, mind was bombarded with various thoughts. But now, I can maintain fair amount of mindfulness on breathing and I can sustain that attention. Say 15 minutes, I can maintain my attention on breathing. Again and again in-breath happens, again and again out-breath happens. So I am happily keeping my attention on them. So at this level, now you should not be satisfied with this level. Rather, now you should inquire about the breath. So this is where we are introducing clear comprehension. We are trying to know about the object. We are now able to establish mindfulness and we are not yet completed, but rather now you are adding another attribute to it. That is to know clearly what is going on the breath. There you can recognize, okay, in-breath is, say, lighter, out-breath is little gross, or in-breath is little gross, out-breath is little lighter, feeling relaxed, or in-breath happens from one nostril, out-breath happens from another nostril. Or in-breath is long, out-breath is short, in-breath is cool, out-breath is warm. So likewise, there are subtle differences between in-breath and out-breath. So this is how you are slowly focusing your attention and extracting details. You are revealing the information of the breath. So as you know, breath itself is a very refined object. So the ability to recognize very subtle aspects of the breath is a kind of a skill that we are developing. So using the breath as an instrument, so we are trying to improve our faculties, improve clear comprehension, improve mindfulness. So breath is the tool in a way. Breath is the field that we are playing, we are working, we are exercising so that the mindfulness muscle, investigation muscle going to be developed. Now, as you are succeeding, then you are able to recognize, okay, in-breath is different from out-breath. These are the differences. Now you don't stop there. You are further improving your attention, improving your mindfulness. And then you can recognize, okay, not only in-breath and out-breath, but even the consecutive in-breaths are not 100% similar. Consecutive out-breaths are not 100% similar. Even two consecutive in-breaths have some minor differences. Consecutive out-breaths have two very minor differences. Even to that level, now you are having very refined mindfulness. And you can clearly recognize those differences. So imagine, if you have that much of a sharp mindfulness, that much of a refined mindfulness, where you can even clearly see the differences between two in-breaths, between two out-breaths. One in-breath is comparatively long. One in-breath is comparatively short. Out-breath is comparatively long or short. So likewise, you can compare. And this indicates fair amount of clear knowing or clear comprehension. And as you are further improving, Buddha invites us to see the complete cycle of breathing. So this is again further refinement of the faculties. So there Buddha very clearly mentioned that we need to be restrained when you are doing it. Now you can feel sabbakaya patisangedi asa sissamiti sikkhati. Now the term sikkhati. Typically, sikkhati term introduce kind of a restrainment. Now, in order to be successful in this stage, you have to restrain yourself. Now, you can see how Buddha very beautifully taking us to a restrainment. Actually, this is how we are now physically restraining ourselves, because otherwise, you can't clearly recognize these subtle details. If you are sort of introducing some perplexity, doubt, or if you have moved your legs, moved your posture, or you simply open your eyes, or if you make a forceful breath. So any of these actually disturb the process, because now you are in a very subtle level, very refined level. If you want to see the complete cycle of breathing, so you have to be very careful. You have to very carefully observe it. You can't even change your posture, because what you have to do is a very refined, very delicate process. More you successful, more you are restrained. So you know how to deal with it. You know how silently you have to maintain the posture, how still you have to maintain the posture, how stable you need to maintain the mind, and how carefully you need to observe the breath. So these actually improve the awareness, improve the mindfulness, and improve the, what you call, the sensitivity of the mind. Now you are becoming fairly a sensitive person. Even a subtle thing makes you a little jerk. Even a minor thing can make you a little jerk. Previously, you are like a sort of indifferent person, kind of a callous situation is there. But now, you are no more like that. Your mind is very sensitive. Even the slightest difference can be noticed. Now, when you are reaching this level, even if we stop our discussion even here, even if you come to this level, you can understand, okay, I have to behave well, I have to restrain my body, I have to restrain my mind in order to see the complete cycle of breathing. Then you can see, okay, this is the beginning of the in-breath, this is the middle, this is the end, this is the little gap just before the out-breath, this is the beginning of the out-breath, this is the middle, this is the end, this is the gap just before the next in-breath. So likewise, you are very carefully noticing it, very carefully observing it, while maintaining a very good stability in your mind, stability in the body, restrainment in the body. Now you can see this mindfulness has properly coupled with the clear comprehension, and that requires a fair amount of restrainment. Satisampajanya introduces restrainment. So Buddha introduced another term here, hiri ottappa. Hiri ottappa means moral shame and moral dread. Basically, as human beings, we all have moral dread and moral shame, otherwise we can't live in this world. So Buddha says, they are the sort of the governing factors of the world. If human beings don't have moral shame and moral dread, they are like animals, even worse than the animals. Since we have moral shame and moral dread, that is why at least to this level, this world being protected. Otherwise, this whole world being destroyed. Since we have moral shame and moral dread, that is how the whole world, at least to this level, being protected, survived. Now, Buddha mentions here, as we develop mindfulness and clear comprehension, so one is careful on how he behaves. Is it suitable for me? Is this activity suitable for me? Is this way of talking suitable for me? Is this way of thinking suitable for me? Is it appropriate for me? Am I doing the correct thing? So when you assume that now you are not careful on it, you went to a pub, you went to a club, so you behave as you were like before, and now you come and try to sit and meditate. It's very difficult because you were in a very unsuitable place, in a noisy place, a distracting place, and now you are trying to be mindful. You are trying to keep your attention on breath. But it's very difficult because all the activities what you did before your meditation is again and again coming and bogging you, coming and bugging you. So again and again disturbing your mind because you have spent some time at a wrong place. Now, so this actually helps you to take some sort of a measurement that this activity, this mindfulness and clear comprehension invites you to behave in a proper manner. So now you can't behave like before, but you are quite sensitive person and all the previous behaviors now have a severe impact on your mind. So when you are trying to keep your attention on breathing, so it again and again distracts, again and again mind going for any kind of a rumination. If you are not careful of how you are behaving outside of your meditation session. Now you understand it. Now you understand, oh, I spent long time at the wrong place. So that is why now the mind is not behaving well. That is why so many distractions today. That is why it is so untamable. Previously, it was not like that. I was doing it well. Mind has fairly tamed and I was able to see the breath properly. But now, today, I can't. Why? So you inquire. So kind of an inner awareness going to develop. Inner investigation going to develop. So why this is happening? So this is how we need to improve ourselves. There is no one else coming and telling you, okay, you did this, you did that. That's why it is not doing well. Even someone is doing it, instructing you, that is good. But you yourself is the teacher. You yourself will understand, okay, I didn't properly behave outside the meditation session. So that's why now I am suffering. That's why the mind is not behaving well. So now you have to correct yourself. Now you have to maintain a correct conduct or moral conduct even outside your meditation. So once you have maintained moral shame and moral dread, so that tells you, okay, this task is not suitable for you. This task might lead to kind of a restlessness in the mind. You won't be successful during your meditation session. When you are going to the walking path, there may be a lot of distractions if you behave like this. So at least you are thinking about how you are going to do your practice session and what would be the impact of what you are currently engaged with towards that practice session during your meditation session. Because you are a keen practitioner. You are very careful on your practice, but not that careful on your moral conduct. But now you suffer because of that. Now you have to introduce this moral aspect. Now you recognize, okay, these activities assume there's various bodily activities are not suitable for me. There is a great impact on mind if I maintain this sort of immoral activity. So therefore, you become fairly morally shamed about what you are doing. So you become a responsible person now. So you become little afraid of doing a wrong thing. It is not because that the government may punish you or your husband or wife may blame you or something like that. But internally, you get kind of a fear. Why am I going to destroy my inner happiness, inner joy? I could have enjoyed a fair amount of inner peace during my practice session if I behave well. Then I feel that I am deserving a better position. I am deserving a better spiritual understanding. I have that discernment. But now if I did something wrong, so you don't get that positive atmosphere. Your mind starts to accuse you. But if you behave well, then such accusation doesn't happen. Rather, you get a kind of an appreciation from your mind. Comparatively, compared to the previous stages, or compared to the previous month, previous years, now you are a good person. You are happy about how you are doing now. You are happy about how you are using your body. You are happy about how well or how honestly you are trying to be truthful. How honestly you are trying to maintain your moral conduct. So likewise, so this kind of a very innocent happiness starts to blossom in your mind. So this innocent happiness, Buddha called as anavajja sukha. You are enjoying some sort of a happiness that is not based on the sights, sounds, taste, smells and tactile sensations, rather because of your inner behavior, because of your own moral conduct. You feel kind of a pleasant person now. You feel like a good person now. You feel like that you are deserving something more, something advanced, something sublime. So this feeling, this positive feeling is very constructive towards the development of mindfulness, towards the development of inner peace. So that is why Buddha actually mentioned that this moral conduct appears like a basis for further development. Now here we started this, mindfulness and clear comprehension. That is the starting point here. And that actually does not stop there. Mindfulness and clear comprehension leads us to the next level, that is the introducing or improvement of moral shame and moral dread. So as you develop moral shame and moral dread, so that actually restrains the sense faculties. So in other terms, what Buddha says is, so if you have mindfulness and clear comprehension, they are the proximate cause for the sustenance of moral shame and moral dread. And in other terms, even though you are trying to be maintaining some sort of a moral shame and moral dread, you can't maintain it properly if you don't have mindfulness and clear comprehension. If you have mindfulness and clear comprehension, you have the basis. You have some sort of a foundation. You have the proximate causes. Then you can maintain moral shame and moral dread. So that's why Buddha clearly mentioned here, when there is mindfulness and clear comprehension, for the one possessing mindfulness and clear comprehension, the sense of moral shame and moral dread possesses their proximate cause. Sati sampajanya bhikkave sati, sati sampajanya sampannasa, upanisa sampannam hoti hirottappam. For the person who has mindfulness and clear comprehension, he has the proximate cause for the moral shame and moral dread. So the moral shame and moral dread can be maintained. It is properly being supported. From what? From clear comprehension and mindfulness. And as you are further developing, then Buddha is taking us to the next step. He is telling, so when one has moral shame and moral dread, so that becomes the proximate cause for the next stage, That is the restrainment of the sense faculties. So you understand, okay, using my eyes to look at these bad scenes is not suitable. Assume that you used to look at something bad in the internet, maybe a pornographic site or whatever it is, something bad. But now your mind will sort of tell you, try to restrain your eyes. Don't look at this nonsense. So why are you destroying your inner peace? Why are you going to suffer during your practice session? If you are not restraining your eyes, so you will going to suffer during your mindfulness session. So your mind will tell you. Similarly, say you are listening to a lot of, say, some noisy music, and that appear like a real nonsense to the mind, and mind being really suffered. And when you are going to meditate, so it's very difficult to calm down the mind. So that noise has really agitated the mind. So now you understand where this agitation comes from. If you are careful about how you are using your eyes, now you can consider about how you are using your ears. So what am I listening using my ears? Am I listening something useful? Am I listening something wholesome? Or am I listening something which is again and again agitating the mind? Assume that you are a person who is so much seeking someone else's, say, opinions. You're asking from him, you're asking from another person, you're asking from another person, changing the channels, going to different channels, say news channels, again and again reading, again and again listening, so much of information. So ultimately, it's going to hurt you, it's going to disturb you during the practice session. Now you got to restrain your eyes, you got to restrain your ears. What am I listening? So there you need to be careful. So if you are listening too much of, say, news, for example, then it actually definitely will agitate your mind, because nowadays too many problems are there. So all the, say, this news media is in an utter competition to boost their, whatever they are, companies, and they are actually creating news. And they are even distorting news to attract people. So they are showing it in a more, you know, very vulnerable manner, overwhelming manner. So we, the person who is looking at them, got really agitated. So his inner peace being destroyed. So if you are doing it again and again throughout the day, then you have no peace at all. So therefore, we need to restrain our ears on how or what we are going to listen. Similarly, the nose, similarly, the tongue, similarly, the body, and similarly, the mind. So we have to be careful on how we are using our sense faculties. If not, we are in an endless battle. Because already we have enough problems, already we have enough defilements in the mind, but unfortunately, we are again and again improving it. How? By using our sense faculties, opening our sense faculties to all these agitating, say, news, all these agitating, whatever the external stimuli. But if you understand this situation, now you definitely have to restrain your bodily faculties. You got to restrain your eyes, you got to restrain your ears, you got to restrain your nose, tongue, body, and mind. So you can see, so this meditation practice, mindfulness practice, has taken up to the clear comprehension level, so that you have a clarity of mind, you have a precise understanding of what's really going on, and you have even to the very sharp level, that even to know different stages of the breathing, the complete cycle of breathing, which is very subtle. And such a sensitivity of the mind allows you to recognize how well you need to maintain your faculties, how protectively you need to maintain your faculties, or how guarded you need to maintain your faculties. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, hirottappe sati hirottappa sampannassa upanisa sampanno hoti ඉන්ද්‍රිය සංවරෝ. So when there is moral shame and moral fear, so that becomes the proximate cause for the indriya sangvara, for the frustrainment of the faculties. When there is a sense of moral shame and moral dread, for one possessing a sense of moral shame and moral dread, restraint of the sense faculties possesses its proximate cause. Now, if we are trying to develop some sort of restrainment of the sense faculties, if you don't have moral shame and moral dread, it is impossible. So if you know, if you have some moral shame and moral dread, so you are unlikely to use your faculties to destroy it, to harm it. So that is why here mentioned, so mindfulness and clear comprehension becomes approximate cause for moral shame and moral dread. And moral shame and moral dread becomes approximate cause for sense restrainment. So we'll stop there for today and we'll go further on the next time. And I stop here for the time being and I like to invite you to present your questions.
Avasarai Bhante.
Yeah.
There are currently 8 questions. I'll start with the questions then. Question number 1 of 8, we've got a large number of questions today. This is on day-to-day activities. I actually think this is a repeat of a question from last week as well. Dear Bhante, with your guidance, I could build a regular practice of mindfulness with breathing and walking activities. Much merits for you and the organizers. Sitting and walking seem very profound and aligning with the Sutta discussions as well. Also, we hear many participants talk about similar experiences. However, with day-to-day activities, I still struggle to get a stable practice. Some of these practices, such as brushing teeth, falls into observation of body sensations or kaya anupassana practice, and some, such as being aware of frustrations or anger, fall into purely observing. Is it possible to simplify this at the beginning such that I would observe what happens to the body in all the day-to-day instances? Much merits for Bhante for this invaluable service. With metta, that's the end.
Yeah, I think it is possible because, you know, say for example, you are brushing the teeth. Probably you can select one task, say one attribute for the time being. Say you are trying to be aware of what is the taste of the toothpaste. So you are trying to recognize that taste. Or how it is being felt to your gums, to your teeth. So that is your primary focus. So there may be a lot of other information available, but you are not worrying about them for the time being. But you are assume that this is the most interesting aspect for you. This is the most prominent feature for you. So you are using that. Say you are driving your vehicle. So at that time, assume that the grab of the steering wheel. So that may be the sensation that is most prominent for you. Assume that this is giving a kind of an example. So now you are trying to be mindful on that. Or else suppose you are careful of the upcoming vehicles. So that is the most prominent factor. You are trying to be mindful on that. So likewise, you can basically recognize so what is the most prominent factor, and that can be used to introduce mindfulness. So that is actually a very common thing in vipassana. In Pali it is mentioned yathapakatam vipassana abhiniveso. Whatever is the most prominent, that is being used as an entrance point or entry point to vipassana. So it is not possible to immediately grab or tip to understand all the aspects of the practice. Rather, if something is very prominent, easy to understand, so you are using that, and then through that you are improving mindfulness. And once you improve mindfulness, later you can investigate what other aspects are available. And say for example, to give another example, say you are sweeping. At that time, suppose there is a lot of noise being generated, so you can recognize that noise. Say assume that you are sweeping the outside, and some noise being generated, and that noise, that sound becomes your attention or the object of your attention. So the point is, you are not daydreaming or you are not fantasizing while sweeping. Rather, you are trying to maintain your attention during this particular task, what is happening right now. So this is the sort of the entry point. I am not saying that this is the most profound understanding, but rather this is a very easy entry point for the practice to maintain at least your mind attention during in the present moment. So that should be the entry point. That is the easy access point. And once it is successful, you can further enhance it, improve it. Yeah, question. You can go to the next question.
Yeah. Question number 2 of 9. This has got two parts. I'll just, it's a report on walking and sitting. I'll just read the walking part first. Walked with a similar sensation which I had a couple of days ago. The front two toes and the relevant part of the front mound being one unit as a chip, but could feel the sole getting rubbed and the sides slides on the floor. This blurred and the clear separation sensation of a chip unit. Continued walking and realized the chip, that is the two toes and the relevant portion of the front mound was and heel were of two different persons. Then the hip and the hands, which were clasped at the back, were someone else's. And I'm looking at all of these as a separate person. Could manage self being nostalgic, solving issues, getting emotional without hampering the walking sensations. These thoughts were not overriding the walking, but gradually it did seize the mindfulness of the walking and again felt the body and the walking self was one. Thoughts came to mind on the decision to give up present settings of my existence and to find a way to get away from the present living pattern. That arose as speed and unwanted excitement and made me walk firm and fast, but didn't have regrets on meditation session as I was aware of all these thinking patterns and was mindful of all these changes. That's the end of the walking report.
Yeah, good. So basically, this is how we are sort of improving ourselves and we ourselves become our sort of the savior in a way. We ourselves see the teacher for us. So we understand what is really going on right now in the mind. So what are the likes and dislikes, how the mind get entangled. And we introduce mindfulness, introduce wisdom, and we disentangled from the situation, unentangled from the situation. Again, mind is clear. Again, mind is unattached, clean, no worries. And again, calm, lighter, feeling spacious. So this is how we need to sort of improve ourselves. We are constantly observing the mind and understand the various conditions and understand various entanglements. And then we are introducing mindfulness and wisdom to unentangle the mind. So you are doing good and you can continue this practice.
Question is the same question, but this is the sitting report. Sitting mindful, sat in the Paryanka, did the Namaskara just to give importance and to be fully mindful on this exercise. Could feel the in and out breath hitting the nostril, not on one place, but on different places in the nostril. Determined to watch the pause after the out breath, which to me was the most vulnerable point where the mind goes out. This point is so blank and not knowing what to be observed, even with a determined mind, it has traversed onto other issues and realized the need of excitement and variety the mind has got used to. It searches for issues simply for stimulation. Realized the mind again and again behaving like this. Felt sleepy and the mind was conceptualizing things. While the breathing was not felt dominantly, it was somewhat overriding by the wind blowing from the fan with the noise to the back of the neck. Much merit to you, Swami Nansat. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, fine. I mean, you have some understanding about mind and how it operates. And this understanding has to grow as your mindfulness improves. Actually, sometimes if the mindfulness is weaker, this observation might get disturbed. So while observing, you might get being absorbed to the thinking machine. So you become driven by thinking. You become emotional. You become a victim of thinking. But on the other hand, if as you are improving mindfulness, so you are able to look at thinking, look at what is going on, what is happening in the mind objectively. So you are like an outsider, you are watching what kind of while being in the theater, while like a spectator, you are watching the drama, you are watching the movie. So likewise, so you are not normal actor in it. So this is how actually we are developing. So you are doing well. Basically, it seems like the report shows that there's more tendency towards the observation of the mind. And it definitely will improve the skills, necessary skills are being improved by developing the Kaya Anupassana even. Say, first of all, we need to develop a fair amount of mindfulness using the body, say breathing or rising and falling or observing various sensations, etc. So this developed mindfulness is capable of observing the mind very clearly. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 10. This is about day-to-day activities. Dear Venerable Bhante, during day-to-day mindful practice, I am able to maintain my focus on the activities I do, and while doing these, also see the thoughts come and go. I am keen to understand how can I distinguish between a thought that I've intentionally thought compared to a thought that has come automatically and I have to tune into it. In identifying this, is it at the beginning of the thought I will be able to see this? If I am inside a thought, may it be intentionally created or tuned to a one that has come automatically, it will be the same. So should I pay attention to the sensation, heartfelt, behind it, just before the thought comes in to identify that? Will my alertness needs to be more sharp to catch this? Thank you very much for your precious time. I'm very grateful for being able to participate in this program. Much merits and appreciate your guidance and advice. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah. So I think as your mindfulness improved, as I mentioned during the previous question, as your mindfulness improved, you are able to clearly see what is going on in the mind. So previously, you didn't have that much of a skill. So when to some extent the emotion has grown, then only you are aware of it. Then only you are reminded of it. Then only you being aware now some sort of, say, anger has developed. At least at that level, you can apply break. You can come out of the scene and you can start to be mindful so that you are cutting off the, you know, the feeding of the thoughts, feeding of the anger. Now it starts to melt. Now it starts to break. Now it starts to disappear. But as you are improving mindfulness, you become more and more sensitive, more and more mindful. And at its very early stages, you can be mindful. Say, for example, the anger is at its earliest stages, you can be mindful. And as a result, you are paying attention to it. You are not feeding it. So very quickly, anger disappears. There may be another stage that you are maintaining fair amount of mindfulness, very clean mind. Now you even recognize the first thought appearing related to the anger, some sort of a person or other kind of a image appearing it. You are attributing it to a person. You are sort of personifying it. You recognize it. He did this, he did that. And then another thought comes to it. Another images are popping up. Few more additions are happening. You are constructing more pictures. You are adding more thoughts to it. You are now fabricating the whole picture. You can recognize this whole fabrication now. So this is how we actually make a devil in a way. It was a simple image. It was a simple sign appearing in the mind. But unknowingly, we have given it a name, a label, and it is producing some amount of a feeling as well. And you are constructing it slowly and adding several parts to it, many parts to it. And this is why what we call as proliferation. So more you recognize this proliferation, more you recognize this constructing nature, fabricating nature, you will understand how futile it is, how useless it is, how painful it is. And it's a kind of a mind-made story. You are the director. So don't direct this film. So simply try to maintain kind of a calm mind. And when even an image appears in the mind, so it's a simply a sign, simply a perception, simply a sanya. So likewise, so we are developing some amount of sensitivity, some amount of restrainment, fair amount of, say, wisdom to recognize all these at its early stages. So therefore, we can say, so at the beginning, we don't have such skills, but as we continue the practice, we are gaining that much of a clarity in the mind, and you are able to recognize what is really happening, what is really going on. So at that time, we can say, okay, we are, to some extent, we are in a good mood or good shape that we can handle the mind. I hope that I have answered the question.
If the person didn't get a response, they can put another question in. Question number 4 of 10. This is actually a poem. I'll do my best. I'm not very good at reading.
You have to recite in a beautiful rhythm.
Oh, no. I'll do my best. I wrote a poem about mindfulness, and please find it below. When you're born as a human being, the number of breaths is written in your forehead. It is a number that decreases with every breath. The one who is skillful is a person who will have the highest number of his breaths taken mindfully. And the winner is the one who reaches the purpose of life before this life expires and will be a hero, bold, courageous, at the deathbed would be brave to face the death with no more craving or asking, as the person has completed what he came for and rest in complete content. Thank you and much merits with metta.
Yeah, sadhu, sadhu. So we have to have that poem close to ourselves during the deathbed. So
it's a good poem.
Yeah. So someone can decide it and we can enjoy, yes, I did it. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 10, a mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, I practice sitting and walking under your guidance and thank you for valuable service. I also try to be mindful on my thoughts and emotions while doing day-to-day work and in the office. Since I am a bit familiar now to focus on the body sensations due to the walking and sitting practice, I try to see what is happening in my body while I get strong emotions and feelings. For example, When I'm getting frustrated, I feel some tightness in my forehead, a very slight one. When I get angry, I feel like a choking feeling and tingling effect on the body. When I develop hatred and want to blame or shout at someone, I feel a bit of dryness in my throat. Sometimes I don't know the exact locations, but I can feel some difference in the body sensations and awareness. I want to know if this technique of being aware of the body immediately when you get the alarm of sweeping away with thoughts or strong emotions is something I should expand and develop. The reason I'm asking this question is sometimes I feel that I'm shying away from my emotions and thoughts by quickly focusing on the body and trying to locate differences in the sensations of the body. Of course, this mere act takes away the stress and issues with strong thoughts and makes me calm and composed immediately. But I don't know if I'm running away from the problem rather than facing and observing the emotion itself. With metta, that's the end.
Yeah, so actually this is a very good method. It's not the bad thing. So this is where, so we are, as you mentioned, that it's true that we are not directly facing the mind or the emotion, but rather we are seeing the impact of it. So as I mentioned, so all the mental activities has their corresponding or some connectivity with the bodily activities, bodily, say, tensions, etc. So if you are able to locate these tensions, locate these stresses, little pains, so that actually stop the feeling of that emotion. So rather than feeding the emotion, you are step back and able to see or able to watch what is happening in the body. Now, who is going to feed the emotion? There is no one. So the emotion become helpless. Emotion become groundless. As a result, emotion will simply go away. It will fade away. And now you are watching the, say, the physical aspects. You are watching maybe the tension, maybe the little irritations, etc. And that also will become fade away. So ultimately, you are free from any kind of an emotion, and you are again back in the normal circularity of the mind. So this is a very, I mean, free kind of a method, good method we can use. And later, actually, once you are confident, and once you are sort of in a, we can say, as sort of brave enough to directly watch the mind, you do that as well. So first of all, we are, you know how to handle it in a sort of a difficult situation. You know there's a, this kind of a escape is possible. But anyway, once you are confident, once you want to get a sort of a challenge, a risk, you can immediately, rather than take into the body, you can immediately look at the thought itself, emotion itself, and try to deal with it. So therefore, you can practice this for a time being. And as you develop mindfulness, as you develop confidence, then later you can even look at the emotion itself as itself. And remember that even when you are quite confident that you can handle emotions, even at a later stage, suppose you are able to maintain a clear mind, even there could be little tensions in your, say, forehead, little tensions in your face, little tensions in your muscles. So by paying attention to them, you can further improve that clarity of the mind. You can't recognize sort of a clear thought going or any sort of a problem, entanglement happen in the mind. Mind fairly all right. But still, if you are paying your attention to the face especially, there may be slight tensions. And if you are, as you are paying attention, those tensions also start to disappear. As a result, you become further calm, further clear, further comfortable, and your mind further becomes stable. No more sort of tension, no more stress. So therefore, you can actually use this body as a very good instrument to develop mindfulness, even develop some higher understanding, even at a later stage, even to release any kind of a tension available in the mind, which is not evident why, how it has happened. Assume that you went through a kind of a hectic day, and you are back at home. Now you may be able to maintain some clarity of mind, but still some, say, tensions remaining because of the hectic day, because of what has happened at the office or whatever, wherever it is. So in order to release those tensions, you can actually observe the body, and you can apply mindfulness to those tense spaces, and then those tensions are also released.
Bhante, we've actually come to, we're going to go over time right now. We've actually only done half of the questions. We have another five.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll go, okay. Question number 6 of 10. This is a theory question. Dear Venerable Bhante, last week you mentioned there are 10 defilements, 10 defilement areas to eradicate in order to enlighten. This starts with Sakkayadithi and the list goes on. My question is, in practice, does do these items I think what they mean is in practice are these items need to be eradicated in a particular order, or can it happen in any order? Much merits to you, Bhante, for all your great advice with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, I like to share a document. Actually, this is something I shared with you during the previous session. That is in the Sabbasava Sutta. This is discussed. So if you pay your attention here, so in this diagram, you can see the 10 fetters. So what are them? Self-identity views, Sakkayadithi, then spiritual doubt, vichikicca, and attachment to rituals and vows, Silabbata Paramasa, sensual lust, repulsion, patiga. So these are the five fetters, what we call as five lower fetters. So during the first attainment, it is said that the first three fetters will be cut off. And the with the attainment of the second sainthood, that is when one become a Sakadagami, that the other two, 4 and 5, that is these other two fetters, sensual lust and repulsion, Kamaraga Patiga, being weakened. And as when one becomes Anagami, those will be completely uprooted. So altogether, when one becomes an Anagami, non-returner, he has uprooted completely the first 5 fetters. So therefore, they are called lower fetters, or sometimes called as Orambhagiya Sangyojana. The other 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10, that is Ruparaga, Aruparaga, Mana, Uddacha, Avijja, they are called Uddambhagiya Sangyoja, or upper fetters, and those only be removed when one becomes an Arahant. So there is no any special method to do for the latter, rather the same practice. So don't worry that thinking that once you become a Sotapanna that you have to go to an advanced course to become an Anagami, to become an Arahant. Rather the same thing we need to do. So you can refer Sila Sutta, you can refer Sila Sutta, where a very beautiful discussion happens between the Venerable Sariputta and Venerable Mahakottita. So Venerable Mahakottita asks, when one has very good moral conduct, what should he do? Then Venerable Mahasariputta mentioned that he has to contemplate the 5 aggregates. So he has to see how impermanent the 5 aggregates, how suffering, unsatisfactory these 5 aggregates, how how non-self these 5 aggregates. Then he clearly asked the next question. So when one becomes Sotapanna, what he has to do? The same answer. Venerable Sariputta mentions, he has to do the same thing. He has to do how impermanent these 5 aggregates are, how unsatisfactory these 5 aggregates are, how non-self these 5 aggregates are. Then Venerable Mahakottita asks what he needs to do in order to become a non-returner, the same answer. In order to become an Arahant, the same answer. So therefore, there is no a special practice to attain the higher stages, rather the same practice has to do. But anyway, we need to understand there are other suttas mentioning that say if one practices one satipatthana properly without knowing much about the others, one has the skill capacity to attain Sotapanna. But if one wants to develop an Arahant, he has to have a fair understanding, fair practice of all the satipatthana. So like that, so we can say, at least if one has a good understanding and good practice, practical understanding of one single satipatthana, it has the capacity to make you a Sotapanna. But if in order to attain further levels, you have to master the others as well. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 10, mindfulness in day-to-day activities. With respect to Bhante, I have come across a situation in daily life due to the current situation and would like to get your views on it. Due to the current situation, work and life has become very quiet. At work, there is less people since most are working from home, and at home, there are minimal visitors and no participation in social gatherings. Due to this, I have come to enjoy a very quiet life. Hardly any disturbances from anyone since I go out or socialize only if I want to. This situation, I believe, is helping me very much to stay calm and improve my practice. But what has happened also is that when I do have to speak with people and interact, it has become a terrible burden. I basically run away from it and keep quiet. But this is not helping my work or family because there are situations that I need to be involved and talk and interact. I have got so used to the quiet life that it is becoming hard. I feel now that I have moved to another extreme and that is not good. Any help and guidance is much appreciated with merits. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, actually very good that you have understood your situation very correctly. That we need to balance. Actually, we should not move to the other extreme, that avoiding everyone and having an extremely secluded life. Rather, time to time, we have to come to the society, we have to associate others, And that actually helps to properly measure ourselves. So otherwise we think that there is no lust, there is no anger. So we sometimes overestimate ourselves. But once we are associating others, when we observe that again anger arises, again sort of resistance arises in the mind. So that indicates our practice is not finished yet. We are still vulnerable to ups and downs of the mind. So therefore, we can say in order to develop all the qualities, we need to have some amount of seclusion, true. But the real war is happening when we are dealing with the typical day-to-day activities, when we are moving with others, when we are facing various challenges. That is where we need to apply what we have learned, what we have practiced, and what are the insights. So the insights being practiced, used during those difficult situations. So don't think that all these moving with the others or the challenges you are facing are outside of your practice. They are the opportunities for you to test yourself. They are the opportunities for you to understand where you are, what kind of a benefit that you have gained because of your practice. So are there any other areas that you still need to develop? So therefore, try to use both possibilities. Maintain during some time of your day in seclusion. Similarly, maintain some time of your day with others as well. Yeah.
Question number 8 of 10. This is a general question. How can a student meditate to help them study for exams? Is it possible to be mindful or meditate in a very noisy place or with distractions? Are there any techniques to remember things using meditation? Is 5 minutes of meditation enough for a beginner? That's the end of the questions.
5 minutes, I don't know. 5 minutes may not be enough anyway. I mean, if you are not doing even 5 minutes, 5 minutes may be good. But anyway, if it is a noisy place, it's difficult to start meditating, we can say. But you can find a kind of a good place, less noisy place. Or what you call a very silent place at the beginning. That is what really useful. And once you have developed to some extent, you can even practice at a noisy place. I'm not saying to the 100%, but at least to some extent, you can practice even at a noisy place when you are able to develop yourself to some extent at a silent place. So that's why as a beginner, it is recommended to start the practice at a very good place or a place which is more conducive to the practice. That is why sunyaga aranyagatova rukkhamulagatova sunyagaragatova. That is how Buddha explains, because as a beginner it is difficult to practice at a noisy place. And assume now you have practiced to some extent at a silent place and you know what is mindfulness and you know some amount of meditation. At that time, even a noise happen, you can use it appropriately. You can use it to develop mindfulness. You can simply be aware of it without making a resistance in the mind. And on the other hand, if you consider the studies, so the meditation or the mindfulness development actually has many benefits to the studies. Say, for example, walking. So you are doing walking practice. So you are developing fair amount of attention. So you are each and every step you have to be mindful. So you are focusing your attention to very different places, many different places. So that way you are gaining some skill to focus your attention where it is necessary. So this is something necessary in studies. So if your mind constantly become distracted, so it is difficult to study, difficult to concentrate. But if you are in command of your mind, whenever it is necessary to concentrate your attention onto a particular place, you have that skill. Then that can be used in studies as well. And again, if your attention can be maintained for a long time on a particular subject, while in meditation, the same thing can be used in the studies as well. Suppose you are reading a book. So without any distraction, you can maintain your attention in the book on the content you can be aware of they are the content. You can even properly understand the content because you are less distracted. And on the other hand, it is revealed that the mindfulness practice has an impact on the memory. So your memory also going to be improved as you develop mindfulness. So these are some benefits that you can actually use or gain in the studies as well. Yeah.
Question number 9 of 10. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for your guidance. I have a question about maintaining inner peace when exposed to external stresses that are outside of our control. For example, having a stressful job or workplace due to high workload and poor management. How does one maintain peace while at work and coming home with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, this work environment actually may have different qualities, different aspects. I mean, we need to find out what are the causes for the stress. Is it because of the other companions, other colleagues that you become stressful? Or because of your boss you become stressful? Or because of the workload you become stressful? Or various targets you become stressful? So likewise, you need to figure out what are the exact causes making you stressed? Or you have a lot of ambitions that you need to get a promotion, so that makes you stressful. Or you have an ambition to complete your work before the end of the day, so that makes you stressful. So likewise, there may be different reasons to make you stressful. Or maybe you have to deal with many customers, and sort of because of that, you become stressful. So like that, I feel it is good to figure out what are the causes exactly that is making you stressful. So on those, once you are known to those causes, then you can understand, okay, how I can properly apply mindfulness here. Assume that you are dealing in a bank. Say you are in a cashier. So you have to deal with many customers and they are in a hurry to go back to get their transaction done. And you are the cashier and you are being loaded with many customers and you have to complete your task quickly because they are online in the queue and you can't maintain a long queue. So likewise, there are some conditions. So there are how I can keep attention. Point is, if your mind become restless, if you are not mindful, then you make more mistakes. Then you do wrong calculations, you miss the balance, etc. So you make more mistakes. So once you are less mindful. On the other hand, if you are very mindful, you are doing your job carefully. You are maintaining precise attention. What's really going on? You are in that point. You are living in that point properly. So therefore, you can apply mindfulness to this tedious task as well. And time to time, you can earth yourself. So that is another important thing. Because sometimes the task carries us completely to some different world. Say that you are writing a letter. You are preparing a document. You are planning something, designing something. So that sometimes bring total attention of yours. Ultimately, you lost your present moment. You are no more in the present moment. You are completely in the design. You are completely in the conceptual world. So that is also stressful. That burns a lot of the brain power. That makes you really difficult or really burnt out. On the other hand, rather than continuously doing that, time to time, earth yourself. Time to time, come back to the present moment. Time to time, take a little breath, long breath, close your eyes and come back to yourself and see what you feel. Say you are on a chair. So you simply close your eyes. See whether you feel your posture. See whether your eyes are closed. See whether your lips are touching each other. See whether you are making any tension because of the tongue. how you are keeping it. See whether you can feel the clothing. So likewise, you are taking your attention to yourself time to time, intermittently. So you are no more in that vicious cycle of that conceptual world continuously, which is so stressful. Rather, time to time, we are returning to the real world, returning to the present moment. That actually cuts off a lot of stress, because you are disturbing that vicious cycle. You are earthing yourself. If some sort of a static energy being built up, so this earthing actually releases that static energy, something like that I am talking. So likewise, so you can find out some small techniques to release the tension, and that again rejuvenate yourself, again sort of refreshes the mind. Again, you can now start attending to the customers. So what we have taken in this example. So therefore, likewise, you have to be sort of somewhat creative to find out what are the causes for this stress, how I can apply mindfulness to these, and how to maintain some good concentration on my activities, and time to time coming back to the present moment, earthing yourself so that the stress being released time to time rather than allowing it to pent up more and more. So these are a few things I feel that I can share with you.
Question number 10, this is the last one. It's a general question. Therawan Saranai, Swamin Wansa. I'm Vidusha from UK. Thank you for organizing this program for me and for me to be able to join. My question is, I am suffering from eczema, so I find it quite hard to concentrate every time I try to meditate due to itchiness. I make an effort to cope up with it and concentrate, but my condition always disturbs my attention. I do understand it is definitely a previous karma of mine and that I'm facing this situation. What advice would you be able to offer to me as I'm continuing to put more effort? That's the end of the question.
Could you repeat the first statement, Chatu?
Yeah. My question is, I'm suffering from eczema, so I find it quite hard to concentrate every time I meditate due to itchiness.
Right. Okay. So anyway, the sort of, as far as the little knowledge I have, this asthma, it's a kind of a respiratory sort of a...
Sorry, Bhante, it's eczema. It's like, I think it's like a skin condition.
I see. Okay. Now I understand. So, but anyway, there is an impact. I don't know. I mean, there are certain findings that the skin sort of problems has a direct impact on the mental aspect as well. I mean, I don't know what's the proper term for that. So when your mind has a lot of stresses, so that is being actually developing some amount of skin rashes, so it's kind of a skin diseases, so like that. So it could be psychosomatic as well. So anyway, if you are able to somehow develop some amount of relaxation, some amount of mindfulness, it could be some relief for you. So anyway, rather than trying to sit, how about walking? So you can simply practice walking meditation, walking mindful walking, where you are simply doing some walk. Each and every step, you are trying to maintain your attention on each step. Again and again, you are walking. So take it lightly. Don't take it too seriously. Don't think that you have to cover a target. Don't have a special or very big sort of a target. Rather enjoy development of mindfulness. Say you are simply going to a walking path. You are going to simply go into a park, open environment. You are choosing a distance between two trees, something like that. So you are now connecting to the environment and you are simply enjoying like a little child starting to walk. Say where your first step being touched to the ground, you enjoy it. Next step being touched to the ground, you enjoy it. So likewise, as you are very beautifully refreshing the mind, beautifully observing this process like a little kid, then you may forget about this itching. Forget about this sort of the skin problem. slowly your attention being driven to the sensation of your foot. So as a result, this whatever the itching may be forgotten, and your attention being driven to the foot sensation, and your mind become calm, clear. So that actually reduces the stress, reduces the tension in your mind. So that may have an impact on this skin rash if it is some sort of psychosomatic. So this is something that which came to my mind for the time being. So these are something that you can try. So don't think that you always have to practice sitting. So rather try to practice walking, especially in the outside, especially if it's possible in a sort of with the environment. And that actually helps you to calm down yourself, clear the mind, and it may have certainly impact on your disease as well. Yeah.
That's the last of the questions, so we'll wrap up. So we'd like to thank Bhante and Pastor Emeritus for giving up valuable time, especially when we go over, for this program. Also to the organizers and people behind the scenes helping this program run, as well as those seen and unseen participating in the program. And lastly, to all the participants, because without you, this wouldn't be a program. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Therwan Saranai.
Therwan Saranai.